This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's the 16th of August, 2010, and today I'm talking to Aidan Monahan, a researcher whose tireless efforts pursuing government documents via Freedom of Information Act requests have led to the unearthing of some extremely revealing information regarding the falsity of the official government-approved 9/11 conspiracy theory. He blogs regularly at 911blogger.com. Aidan Monahan, it is a pleasure to have you here today on the Corbett Report.
Thanks for having me.
Well, not to be too cliched, but perhaps it would be most fruitful to start by asking you the inevitable questions about how and when you started questioning the official 9/11 story and what motivated you to really delve into this 9/11 research.
I believe it began about 4 or 5 years ago, maybe longer, probably six. There was some paleoconservative writer named Debbie Kidd, I believe her name was, and she brought up the topic of one of the videos. At that time, I believe it was called In Plain Sight. And I looked at that, and that was one of the first things that got me to questioning everything that happened. And then from there, my research just moved on to other areas, and it's sort of snowballed since.
It certainly has. It's snowballed into just an incredible amount of work that you've done, and it is available, as I say, on 911blogger.com for people who want to follow sort of what you've done over the years. But let's focus specifically on the tack that you've taken in your research, because you have uncovered an incredible treasure trove of information through the use of Freedom of Information Act requests. So why did you decide to go the FOIA route, and what have been the fruits of those requests so far?
I began this about 3 years ago, and at the time I did it, it seemed like an unexplored area of research. And since that time, I've sent off just countless. I've totally lost track of the number I've sent to multiple agencies, New York State and federal, mostly. And it seems that the reoccurring theme is in most cases there is no information available. That in some cases there has been some information provided that is proven somewhat interesting, in my opinion, in some cases.
Right. Well, let's run through some of that, because as you say, there's just so many things that we don't know about 9/11 that we really should know by now, but we're being refused access to. For example, just one example is the logs, the White House Secret Service logs from 9/11 itself. But what are some of the other examples of information that we don't have that we really should?
Some of that information seems to be mostly held by the FBI, and they, of course, have that all of that information tucked away in a file that has been declared exempt from disclosure by the Department of Justice. And I've been busy lately trying to pry those records from them via a civil rights lawsuit, and it's proceeding somewhat slowly. I was hoping it would move a little quicker. And eventually I frankly expect them to just declare the records as continuing to be exempt from disclosure. But, I just want to, if not getting the record, I want to have put them on the record as saying 10 years later, no, you still cannot see this information. And basically, hopefully put them on the defensive, where somebody else may step up in the future and try to continue this.
Well, absolutely. I think that's definitely the goal we need to be aiming at, because just what you've managed to uncover so far has been extremely revealing. And regarding that FBI 9/11 records requests, that lawsuit that you have ongoing, it's talking about things like records describing aircraft wreckage from Flight 77 and 93, and records describing the make and model of flight management computers or flight management systems, and multimode receivers, talking about the inventory control serial numbers for flight data recorders, all sorts of information, just basic details of the investigation that should be readily available, certainly now, 9 years later, when there's really no possible justification for hiding behind any type of smokescreen of national security. And it is, I think, telling in itself that you're receiving such resistance to these requests. And as I understand it, the FBI has actually attempted to claim that all 9/11-related records are exempt from FOIA?
That's correct. The whole entire, anything related to the topic is tucked away in a file that says hands off, basically.
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah, just incidental information that would verify their story. I put it in my lawsuit. I cited all of the programs that have covered the controversies, BBC, National Geographic, and others, who've broadcast documentaries surrounding the public questions and around certain discrepancies. And so one would think that the Department of Justice would be compelled to, for public relations reasons, just to basically put this information out there, restore public confidence, and put to bed all of these questions. But they continue to fight me on this.
Well, that's certainly right, and the FBI does contain such a vast amount of information on this, obviously, but it's not just the FBI. There's the FAA and the NTSB and the Secret Service. What other types of agencies have you requested information from?
I've also gone after some of the FAA records. It seems, according to an answer I got from them a couple of years ago, that they may be, those records may be under the control of the FBI. Some information that I was able to get, for example, was from the Bureau of Transportation Statistics for the travel times for the aircraft in question preceding 9/11, and that did generate an interesting discrepancy. For example, the agency FOIA reply indicated that much information was not available for three of the four aircraft, actually all four, for the entire year of 2001, according to their FOIA reply. However, if one went on to their online searchable database for these aircraft and departure times, arrival times, in the days, weeks, and months before 9/11, one can find that there are actually times available. So basically, we have two sets of information from the same agency regarding the same aircraft, which should rightly cause one to wonder if this information is authentic.
Exactly. It would have to, obviously, when there's a discrepancy like that coming from the same source. And at the time, I think that particular story generated a lot of interest in thinking that maybe the planes had not flown since the end of 2000. But I think just the discrepancy itself is something that really does need to be explained. Has there ever been some sort of official explanation for that or any update to the records?
No, personally contacted their FOIA officer within a few days of getting the answer back, and he explained to me where he had gotten the information from for the FOIA records, and it just happens to turn out to be the same location where the online database is located, basically the same source. So we're basically obtaining two sets of information from the very same source.
Interesting. Well, one of the interesting documents that have come out recently was regarding NIST and an internal document that was a rejection of request for information regarding the model that they used for their so-called computer model, which showed the collapse of WTC-7 in quotation marks. I don't know, was that you that actually put in that request, or was that another researcher?
No, those requests were the results of others. I recently followed up myself just to see what answer I could obtain, and I obtained the same answer, and that basically these files are exempt from public disclosure because they, according to the NIST director, may jeopardize public safety. And basically the whole matter has been taken away from the Freedom of Information Act and put into the hands of Congress, because Congress created the law, basically the escape hatch for NIST to, via the director, put this information off limits.
Well, explain that process for people. How exactly are they claiming this is jeopardizing public safety?
It's basically just a very conclusory answer. They don't really explain how or why the information is believed to jeopardize public safety. It's just that around 2002, I believe, Congress created this little escape hatch for an agency such as NIST during an investigation to basically put certain information off limits if it's believed to jeopardize public safety.
Just incredible. And one of the other incredible things that your research has uncovered that I haven't seen get a lot of attention, but I thought was quite interesting when it came out, was the information that you uncovered about a company called Turner Construction and the renovations that they were doing in the Twin Towers right up till the very morning of 9/11. Can you tell us a little bit about Turner Construction?
Yes, some other FOIA researchers had gotten hold of some records regarding some projects that had been proposed in the year before 9/11 by the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, the parties who were managing the property at the time, and certain contractor names popped up in those records, and I decided to do some cross-research on some of that information and eventually determined that the CEO of the company at that time is somebody who later became a very rather close associate of President Bush himself. Later became the mayor of Dallas, Texas, later attended economic policy meetings, international economic policy meetings with President Bush overseas with other foreign heads, was appointed as a director of an organization known as the White House Fellows by President Bush. I don't recall the exact year. This is after 9/11. And who turns out today to be a neighbor of President Bush within a couple of miles, I believe. So, yeah, some interesting, you know, associations tied up, you know, turned up rather there. And also the director of NIST at that time also later became, I don't recall the exact details. I would have to pull it up in front of me again in order to recall every detail. But, yeah, there was definitely some interesting associations between the CEO of Turner Construction and President Bush.
That's right. And tell us about what Turner Construction was doing, or what we now don't know about what they were doing in the World Trade Center.
Right. There was a property management assessment of the property about 9 months before 9/11. And within that assessment was proposed work upon the steel supportive columns within the elevator shafts, for example, among many other things. And some of the deficiencies noted were rusting upon these steel columns and abatement of asbestos containing fireproofing material. Removal of that was also proposed. So when one says that there was no opportunity for any unscrupulous party to tinker around within the World Trade Center, you know, vis-a-vis the demolition or controlled demolition route, that answer would certainly seem to be false. There seems to have been ample opportunity for some unscrupulous work to have been performed there, possibly, and certainly there was significant work being done in that area. And it turns out that Turner Construction was more than likely the entity doing this work. It appears that they were working up until the day of very morning of 9/11 on the property, and going back as far as 3 or 4 years at least, according to some records. And also happened to turn out that Turner Construction also built the headquarters of an organization known as the Naval Sea Systems Command, which is a division of the Department of Defense. And one of their divisions, the Indian Head Naval Surface Warfare Center, just happened to be one of the only kids on the block at the time, so to speak, who were developing the energetic nanothermitic materials that were later discovered in the World Trade Center dust.
Right, absolutely. And I'm sure my listeners will be familiar with Kevin Ryan and his work looking at some of the connections of the people involved in testing and creating these nanothermitic materials. Absolutely. It just keeps going deeper and deeper. And again, very telling that apparently the records describing the work that they were doing and the projects they were doing in the World Trade Center were destroyed in the World Trade Center on 9/11, along with other key documents that we know from, for example, the Enron investigation records and things like that. So just more valuable documents that were destroyed on
that
day.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah, I did ask for the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey for any records regarding Turner Construction for work done on the property, the World Trade Center, and they did advise me that all that information was destroyed on 9/11. I'm currently trying to seek some ways around that obstacle. for example, in order to perform major work on properties within New York City, one has to obtain permission from the New York City Department of Buildings and permits to proceed with work. And I've finally been able to find the Freedom of Information contact for that organization and have some requests pending, and also other requests with the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey for copies of these permits that they may have had, which may very well indicate who was performing this work there at the World Trade Center, and maybe some other information, hopefully. And those requests are pending, and hopefully we'll have those answers shortly.
Well, incredible. I certainly look forward to that, and once again would urge people to go to 911blogger.com to keep an eye on that that information resource for more information as it develops on that. But Aidan Monahan, I think it's self-evident that the tack that you're taking with Freedom of Information Act requests is an extremely fruitful area of research, and you never really know what kind of information you're going to end up with when you put out these requests. And I think that's one of the sort of wild cards that we have in this research, in hopefully getting out some of the nuggets that can lead us towards other areas of research and other things that we didn't even think to ask before. So it's an extremely effective tool. And to that end, I think maybe it would be a good idea to encourage other people to take up this tool, because obviously you're doing an incredible amount of work, but you can't do everything yourself. So tell us a little bit, walk us through the process of putting in a Freedom of Information Act request and what really goes into this whole process.
Okay, sure. Yeah, all federal agencies have access to, or basically operate through Freedom of Information Act laws. And if you know what you're looking for and you know who has what you're looking for, submitting a request is really not that difficult lately, because most agencies have gone to the electronic means of doing so. And basically, visiting their websites will allow anyone to find, eventually, without too much trouble, the links to the Freedom of Information Act officers of each agency and the email addresses for those people. And if you know what you're looking for, you can basically fire off a request within 5 or 10 minutes.
So basically, as a rule of thumb, I assume it's best to keep the requests as specific as you possibly can.
Sure. And in many cases, I found that the officers are willing to work with you. If they don't feel they have enough information, they'll contact you and ask for more. And most of them are very cooperative, except for the Department of Justice. You know, because of everything being exempt from disclosure, they just give you very short answers and so forth. But you know, most of the other agencies have been helpful when I've needed it.
Well, then on the flip side of that, do you think it might be fruitful to cast the net widely and then narrow it down with the help of the Freedom of Information officer?
Yeah, I've done that specifically, and they will come back and in some cases and say we need something a little more general, or rather more specific. There haven't been a whole lot of agencies that I've really been able to focus on because, given the issue of 9/11, only so many agencies may have been associated with the event itself. The FAA, NIST, Department of Justice, FBI, CIA, well, Secret Service, CIA to a lesser extent.
Right, exactly. And obviously those are the places where people should be concentrating their firepower, so to speak, in requesting these documents and trying to get some of these nuggets of information out. But, well, let's step back for a moment and take a look at the bigger picture of what we're really doing here, because obviously we are uncovering some of the information that is hidden in the corridors of power that actually is there for the most part, and we're just trying to get it out to the public about one of the defining political moments of our generation. So certainly this is no trivial matter in any stretch of the imagination. And as we sit here on the brink of the 9th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, I guess there's always the fear that although we've clearly won the hearts and minds of many of the people who have begun questioning the official story of 9/11, the political and the judicial action on that front seems to be further away than ever. And it almost seems like maybe a losing momentum. So my question is, I guess two-part. A, how do you stay motivated and to keep doggedly pursuing these truths? And B, what do you think is the ultimate direction that we're heading at this point, and what do you see playing out from this point?
Your first question, what causes me to continue to pursue this?
Right, yeah.
Just my belief that we're very close as a movement to really connecting all of the dots here, you know, thanks to the research of, you know, other parties and so forth, who've all collectively connected many dots. And I just feel like the answers to a couple of very compelling topics are not too far, in my opinion. They're really not that far away. With a few more steps, I believe we can finally connect a lot of dots here that will create, you know, a fairly clear picture of really who is responsible for all of this.
So what do you think are those main dots that need to be connected, and how close are we?
Personally, well, with respect to the building demolitions, I mean, thanks to the research of others, I mean, I feel we're very close to the cause of that. In my humble opinion, the other significant area is the aircraft attacks themselves, and I've also done much research in that area, figuring out how, you know, these aircraft may have been covertly delivered to their targets that day. And it seems that the technology was all there and only became available just shortly before the attacks themselves. And I'm still pursuing that matter as often as I can.
So by covertly delivered, we're talking about some type of remote control?
Yeah, remote control is a term that's generally used to describe such methods. Actually, the technology, more specifically, that could have been and may have been most likely utilized were the autopilot functions of the aircraft and the navigation systems, brand new at the time, such as GPS. All of these brand new future function systems had only become available about a year before 9/11. And based on all the study I've done, they were quite capable of delivering the aircraft to the targets in New York City on 9/11. Highly accurate, redundant, reliable systems that almost virtually no one at the time knew about. They were cutting edge research and development, the results of cutting edge research and development by the FAA and Raytheon and other members of private industry, Rockwell Collins and other companies. And it just so happened that the 757s and 767s that were used that day were aircraft very central to that technology. They were some of the very first used. And just about a year before the attacks, all of these systems were in place. They were intended to be retroactively installed into the aircraft of the United and American fleets. The GPS signal had become available about 18 months before the attacks. And previously, for years, the military had always deliberately degraded the signal so to deter abuse by foreign enemies. But in 2000, in May that year, they removed the degradation of signal quality. And then later, a few months later, actually enhanced what GPS signals were available. They augmented those, basically allowing, for navigation purposes, a flight management system to determine within about 3 meters the location of an aircraft while it's in the air, which is extremely accurate. And under autopilot control, enough to deliver the aircraft to the targets, which were 208 feet wide in the cases of the World Trade Center towers. So I find all of the timing of the emergence of that technology quite suspect.
And absolutely fascinating, really. Extremely interesting and potentially, I guess, an extremely fruitful area of research. So what kind of information are you hoping to uncover in that regard?
Fortunately, I've been able to find most of that in open source materials. It's all there if one wants to really dig for it. And I've been chasing that aspect for about 3 years. And basically, the one of the final pieces of the puzzle will be the information I've requested in my current lawsuit, which is basically the what is known as ACARS traffic. It's basically flight management computer automated radio communications that are sent back and forth between the airlines and an aircraft in the air. And it would basically verify or debunk the official narrative, because if the information does not match what was explained for the public with respect to these aircraft, then of course, you know, we certainly have what could potentially be a smoking gun. I would like to see that information. I would like to know exactly, you know, what sort of automated communications were taking place between the aircraft and the airlines on 9/11 in order to determine whether or not these aircraft were under some covert autopilot control, because the technology that became available about a year or so before 9/11, you know, in fact allowed an airline to redirect literally, virtually, an aircraft while it's in mid-flight by delivering electronically an entirely new flight plan from the one that's currently underway, for example. And most people don't realize that commercial aircraft, you know, 95% of the time are under autopilot control. You know, these aircraft can, you know, virtually fly themselves, and most people don't realize that. And I think that's why so many have bought into the official story. They have just assumed that it must be true because human pilots must be required to do what we observed that day. But in fact, other means are capable of doing what we all saw that day as well.
Extremely interesting, extremely fascinating. Well, Aiden, as we draw towards the end of our time here, just in closing, if there is the next Aiden Monahan out there listening right now who's getting motivated to actually get in and start doing this research for him or herself rather than just passively receiving it, what advice would you have for them in starting to take up this quest, and what pointers would you give them, or what areas of research would you encourage them to take a look at?
Probably, it seems that I really can't think of any other agency that might have freely available FOIA information. It seems that everything of interest seems to be held by the FBI at this point. And if one is considering requesting that information from them, they should realize that it will probably wind up in litigation. And in that case, they should really do their homework on FOIA litigation, because the Department of Justice have some of the best lawyers available. And basically an entire team, once it reaches litigation, you're not just dealing with one other person. You're dealing with an entire team. You're dealing with an assistant district attorney. You're dealing with the Department of Justice in Washington, D.C., the FBI's Records Management Bureau. In my case, there are half a dozen different people who I'm basically competing with here. And given my lack of experience relatively in this area, they have in the past been able to trip me up on some matters. And, of course, once you forget to do something in a lawsuit, there's no going back. You have to live with that mistake.
That's unfortunately true. But do you have any legal background or experience with litigation?
No. And I did the most homework I could possibly do on my own, and in most cases it was enough. In a couple of instances, I wish I had known more, but I guess it is what it is.
Well, absolutely, but I still think that in some ways maybe that's even more an inspiring tale for people out there, because it is good to know that you don't have to be an expert, and you don't have to have, you know, 30 years of experience doing this up your sleeve. The only way to really get the actual experience you need to do this is to go out and do it. So I certainly hope that's inspiring for people out there who do perhaps want to take up this as perhaps a way of finding out more about the events of 9/11. Well, extremely fascinating conversation, and as I have said repeatedly and continue to say, I hope people will go check out 911blogger.com, not only for your blog, but of course for the daily news updates and things regarding 9/11 research. But are there any other websites that you'd like to point people towards?
currently not offhand necessarily. I mean, I think many are aware of sites such as the History Commons. They're continuously updating, and there's just so much information available there. It's a great place to start.
Absolutely, yeah. I concur wholeheartedly.
Regarding 9/11, the whole topic itself, basically, just in my humble opinion, the whole, and many others too, that the whole official story is basically no more than an unproven allegation. It's largely never been proven. From the building collapses to the aircraft attacks themselves, the government version of events has never been proven. And there are certainly alternative means for these attacks to have unfolded, and other alternative perpetrators and motives as well. And so it's definitely not an open and shut case by any means.
Absolutely right. And do you remain optimistic that 9/11 Truth will continue to have breakthroughs from this point?
I think so. And I think from here on out, I think really the great focus should remain on New York City itself with respect to the World Trade Center. The authorities there have jurisdiction to investigate what happened at the World Trade Center. I believe that the answers to what happened there will be found in the events in the weeks and months leading up to that day. What was going on in the World Trade Center? Who was doing what there? And I believe that all those answers can be found with even a local investigation. I don't believe that the federal authorities are even required here. We don't have to try to move the immovable object in Washington, D.C. to get this done. This can all be done very locally there. And being that New York City was the victim, for the most part, of the attacks, there's obviously a great interest there. And once public support could be built, there could be enough of a push to compel these authorities to move on this information and really, find some of these answers for us and find out who actually was behind the attack. Because, as I said, the official story itself is an implausible allegation at this point in time for me.
It certainly is, and certainly we must continue to pursue truth and hopefully one day reach 9/11 justice as well. So absolutely, my hat's off to you once again for all the incredible work that you're doing, and I certainly wish the best of luck in all of your endeavors in the future. Aidan Monahan, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Sure, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.